time now for the Isle of Lucy podcast number 9. We got a few things on this episode here. Primarily part 2 of my phone interview with Isaac Kidder. Isaac and I had a long talk about all sorts of random things, including the Paul and Isaac show, different ways of recording things, various other memories from college years and whatnot. So here is part 2 of my interview with Isaac. So the trip to the grocery store was successful?
Decently, yeah. I got the provisions I needed to make it through the week.
Good.
So I spent time at night, the best time I was shopping, because you get no one your way, you got no lines at the end.
Yep.
It's really fucking annoying, usually, when you go, like, during the day. Like, if you go around dinner time, you're like, they were between, like, 5 and 7, it's terrible. Wait in line like just as long as you actually went around shopping for. If you were shopping for a half hour, it's like you wait. I've seriously waited in line for like 20 minutes before. It's ridiculous. But at night, I just go straight through. It's nice.
Yeah, I like going at night.
I try to do all my shopping at that time, so. Yeah. Oh, is it that?
Yeah.
I had to put in some outlets, some 3-prong outlets. We have a lot of 2-prong ones that aren't grounded.
Yeah.
So, just trying to renovate.
We just were dealing with some outlets here a few minutes ago. We, because, you know, I said our DirecTV was out.
Yeah.
And it turned out the problem was something came unplugged in a, like, underneath the house. So we had to lift up a panel to get access to underneath the house and plug something back in.
Underneath the house? Like...
Yeah, like, underneath my bed in my room, there's a panel to, like, underground. There's a bunch of wires.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was there.
That's really bizarre. Do you are you recording right now, or do you want to start recording, or...
Yeah, it's gone.
Oh, it is gone? Oh, okay. Excellent.
Last time I talked to you, you mentioned that you had done some jamming with Bedurtha.
Yeah, yes I did. We went to his church, the one in the hood, if you will, and like, and he was telling me some stories, you know, when I showed up at the church, and like, yeah, I went in his back door, and, you know, I mean, parking lot, it's kind of dark, it's cold, and it's like, right across the bridge from downtown, or, you know, like, the area that would be considered downtown, so it's, like, right across, like, 94, 35, so it's, like, a pretty rough area, at least it used to be. Like,
yeah.
I don't think it's as bad as it used to be, at least from what Peter was saying. He was saying, like, there's definitely some, like, sketchy things that happened in the early days, like, people would be, there's some crack houses, like, right across the street, there'd be ruffians hanging out, and there's always the constant threat of someone coming to the church and, like, robbing them. Like, you recalled some of this one particular event when he was actually at church, and he was young, and, like, this one guy came in, he was either one guy or a couple guys, I can't remember, and, the guy, like, tried to lift a TV or something along that line, some sort of piece of electronic equipment, and he was just nonchalantly, like, walking by this group of kids, you know, like, just some stranger, you know, with some of the church's kids, and some of the adults of the church tackled this guy and took him down. It was definitely a pretty sweet moment for him to see this, and anyway. Yeah, it's cleaned up, I guess. Like, the houses aren't so much... Most of the houses aren't crack houses anymore, which is a good thing. And, But yeah, we jammed. We played, and, yeah, actually, my brother joined us, too. So, it was Ben, my brother, myself, and Peter. And it's kind of... It was an interesting situation. It was a Thursday night, and we were playing in the sanctuary, And it looks like they have like a decent amount of equipment. I didn't bring my drums. I just played the acoustic drums they had there. They had this grand piano, and they have like all these mics and whatnot. And they have this digital mixer board and everything. And it was like, you know, it seemed like actually pretty decent amount of equipment for the church. And but the funny thing was that there was like some sort of like not so much a class, but a gathering, like a sort of like a fellowship or something that was going on outside in kind of the, maybe it is like the fellowship hall, not the sanctuary, the, you know, the foyer area outside the sanctuary. I don't know, I forget the particular name for it, whatever. But there was this, like, little kids to, like, adults to old people just hanging out there. And so at first it was kind of awkward. It was just like, you know, are we supposed to be playing? You know, is this cool and everything? But, you know, it was pretty good. It was a good time.
So. You mean, like, were you playing Possum Kingdom or anything?
We did break into that at some point. Actually, I think PG broke into it, and we played either the, like, most of it or the whole thing. It was pretty cool.
I was just thinking in terms of inappropriate lyrics for... church audience.
Yeah. You didn't want to die.
That's why we couldn't do it at Relay for Life, you know.
I don't think it would have been much of a problem. I don't think a lot of people listen to lyrics. I think we could probably actually blatantly sing about getting cancer or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's definitely true that we could have gotten away with a lot more than we did.
I wonder if it would have been a problem. That's the question. If people would have been turning heads, kind of looking at each other funny, like, do you want to die at a cancer rally?
Man, the only thing remotely controversial that I can think of that we did was when we performed Pause Oppression. That had all that profanity in it. But, I mean, I never heard anyone say anything about it.
Oh, yeah. What would you think our most offensive song would have been? I always go back to the Paul and Isaac show.
Well, that's something different entirely.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's an offshoot, and, you know, maybe we should stress that. We should probably talk about the Paul and Isaac show a little bit.
Paul and Isaac show, the side project from Isle of Lucy. Just telling the radio audience about the backstory of the Paul and Isaac show. Originally, it was going to be you and me doing Isle of Lucy songs, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
That's right, because it started because we played a show, an acoustic show at the Contented Cow, and you and I had to leave early. And so PJ and Martin ended up finishing the show. And then you and I were like, well, we should do a show of our own. And so that was like the initial concept, but as far as the subject matter, that eventually became completely devoted to the anger and other negative emotions that Isaac and I were going through at the time due to the sudden and abrupt ending of relationships that we were in.
All the planning grew from there, the mythology of the situation. Bond and grew, the lore of it, the situation grew, and never even panned out. You know, it's unfortunate, but...
Well, I mean, that's due in large part to, we kind of did become less angry.
Yeah, I guess the Paul Isaac show, the reason it was founded, it was mainly founded upon bitterness and anger.
Yeah.
And... something that's founded on that, I don't know, it's probably best not to, like, hold on to that too dearly and too heartily, so.
Right, and I mean, like, if we had done it a couple times, if we had performed as that a couple times, we would have had to keep up appearances, you know, we would have had to stay in that mindset in order to be successful.
Yeah. Well, imagine a Paul and Isaac show back-to-back with Posse 5. How contradictory would that be?
The Posse of Five is at, that's at, like...
That's, the crew of five guys that kind of freestyle rap.
That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, like, two very contradicting styles. Like, they're all about having fun and being happy. Like, how great of an opener would be? Biggest downer group of all time.
Over Christmas, you and I were talking about going back, like doing a show in the Lion's Lair of the Paul and Isaac show.
I remember talking about that. How, if we were to come back in a year and we're graduated, you know, I mean, obviously some people are going to recognize us, you know, we still know a lot of faces on there, but it's still just random that we're playing there.
Yeah.
And
it'd be best if we didn't even promote it too strongly, you know, just put up a few flyers that day.
Yeah.
We're just kind of there.
And yeah, we show up to play a show, but we don't even advertise it before the day. The only people that are even viewing the show are the people that happen to walk into the pod to buy, like, personal fan beats or something.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
Oreo shake.
Some strange chance, like, they decide to study in there.
Yeah.
God forbid, you know. And they get to the point where they're studying, and, you know, within 5 minutes, they're just going to leave.
Yeah.
They better put in their earbuds and jack the shit out of their iPod. I'm trying to think, at what point would someone... Okay, what were we going to start out the show with? I'm trying to think. I don't know if we never... Do we ever plan, like, a set? I mean, we don't have that many songs. I mean, since we're going to do a lot of Violent Lucy songs, but we had, like, with Fugue You, we had,
That was the only original song we actually wrote.
Okay.
And it was just playing...
Oh, just remakes of Violent Lucy songs, like, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Fugue You was just both of us playing G scales out of time. On guitars. It was like a fugue, and it was kind of cool. And I mean, we did that once, and we're like, all right, one down, next song.
One down. That was good.
I mean, it's too bad we never recorded that.
What's that?
It's too bad we never recorded that. Fugue You.
It's never too late. It's never too late. You know what we're gonna have to do? We're gonna have to send files. Like, one will lay down a track, send it to the other, lay down another track, then send it back, lay down another track. So, you know, he's kind of like, send it back and forth, each layer it over and over.
Well, that's kind of what.
It's kind of fun to do, though, like, just in general, even if it's not for the Paul and Isaac show, just send it back and forth, and, you know, but it's just two of us. By the time we finish, we have like 20 tracks.
That's essentially what happened with the Long Way Around album. I mean, you recorded the drum track separately and sort of sent it on to the rest of us.
That's true, I guess it was.
And then you came back at the end to, you know, put a few touches here and there. Well, back when we were, you know, it was the summer before senior year, when we were looking to start putting together album 2, like, just because of everyone's logistics and schedule, I remember PJ and I were thinking for a while about doing something like that, of having parts electronically sent in, but ultimately it was the kind of thing where we both kind of realized that, well, if we're going to do anything, we need to have all four of us directly involved in it.
Yeah.
Do you remember the song Color Machine?
Not vividly. I'll
put it in this podcast. It's was that.
Put that in there. Yeah. Was that one of PJ's? Is it yours or?
It was one that PJ and I wrote and recorded completely spontaneously on the spot.
I definitely remember hearing that on one of those demo albums, but I don't remember how.
Well, here is Color Machine.
Just take a nice and slow. There's too many colors to be.
We actually tried playing it at White Bear Lake that summer.
Okay. Hey, favorite Isle song, go.
Favorite Isle song?
Yeah.
Oof. You know, I'll always have a little soft spot for I Can't Complain.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it was the song that I think, more than most, was very much a group effort. But even just that main riff part, I mean, PJ doing the opening two chords from Blackbird, and me playing that part, and then like having those just layered to be that new thing.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet. That was a good song.
But the Sun Song, of course.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Sun Song, I think Sun Song and then Long Way for me. I think that's how it rolled.
Yeah.
I think that's not necessarily maybe, I don't know, maybe that doesn't mean that they're the best songs, but I enjoyed playing on the most, I think.
Yeah.
And
I mean, those are ones that we practice to the point of just being able to pull them off without a hitch at any time.
Yeah, like, you didn't even... It was second nature. Mm-hmm. Like, I could play that in my sleep. And we can play in other states of mine, too, which we did very well.
And, like, Pause Oppression was a cool song, but we never had the opportunity to play it enough to where it became second nature.
Yeah, if we would have gotten it down a little bit more, that probably would have been timeless right there. Timeless classic that we would always put out.
And then, of course, another one that, you know, was great and just a shame that we only played it in public once was Silverfuck.
Yes. I'm really regretting not playing that at Lutefest. There's a quality to it.
It was one of those things that was just such a random idea for us to try and ended up working a lot better than we thought.
Yeah, you know, it's... No regrets.
Do you remember the acapella... Do you remember the acapella version?
Yes, I do. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Where it started singing a cappella, but then we ended up just everyone chimed in.
Yeah, because it was when we were
for way too long. Like we ended up doing the whole song.
Yeah, we were packing up after practice, and like just you know picking up chords and amps and moving stuff, and then I just started doing the do 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 dicky dicky dicky, and then everyone else started joining in, and then we did the entire 8-minute song.
Laughing like ha 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 this is stupid, but it was like everyone was just kind of saying that, just but everyone kind of secretly liked it, and that's why I kept going. No one really wanted to stop it.
Yeah, I always kind of wondered what Jeff thought of that. Or
oh yeah, I guess Jeff would have been there for that.
Yeah, he just kind of he probably already thought that we were pretty stupid.
Yeah, I'm sure he's pretty desensitized by that point in the year where he just was like whatever, you know. I mean, he's listening to, like, all of us play some, or say some crazy, crazy, stupid shit, you know?
Yeah. But we were good to him. I remember we threw him some extra hours when practice got canceled and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Jeff was a good tech.
He was a great tech.
He's one of the best, you know? He was awesome.
Like, I think that we specifically asked that he, mix us for Lutefest.
Yeah, I think that he's kind of my, kind of my protege in the plot.
Yeah.
Like he was taking my spot. Like I always, you know, my blessing was onto him. Like everyone else, you know, I mean, you know, there's some other good guys, but you know, they're all kind of, they're either like 1 year younger or they had different intentions, they had different road they were going down. Whereas like Jeff, you know, I could kind of like, you know, give him some pass on some of my knowledge to him, or rather just like not even necessarily knowledge, but just more pause etiquette, if you will.
Yeah.
And just the way I would go about thinking your pods, and you know, just kind of have him like take my style and roll with it, and hopefully like continue that, like kind of laid back.
Not teaching him the right way to do things, but teaching him the Isaac way. I said not necessarily teaching him the right way to do things, but teaching him the Isaac way to do things.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Like, the whole thing about working at the Paws is, it was a love-hate relationship for me. It was, you know, I liked working there, but at the same time, I hated the Paws because of either run. Like, the whole executive order of it was a terrible organization. They don't know how to run anything. They don't care necessarily about the students. And they have, well, an adult supervisor is just a freaking, she just has no soul in her. So, she's always pissed off. Like, if you ever talk to her, she's, always pissed off. And, they just, it's funny. It's ironic because the students that are in it don't even care about the students.
Yeah.
However, what I was going to say, the pause, it's great. I mean, it's great working there to have full access to the equipment. You can kind of go in there when you know the schedule. You can kind of go in whenever. You can use the equipment. Kind of get a little more ins for your bands if you want to practice. That is not necessarily meaning you'll get more ins for your band that you play anywhere. For events at the pause.
Yeah.
And always taking free advantage, always taking food opportunities in the pause kitchen.
Food opportunities.
Yeah, food consumption opportunities. Does that make more sense?
No, it was great, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I always take advantage of food opportunities.
Exactly. And it was always funny, too. It seemed like each year, at the beginning of the year, there'd always, most of the new PAWS kitchen workers, which is kind of, they're all confused and... The pause kitchen has, I don't know, 1,000 employees. Who knows? Every time you go in there, there's someone new working.
Yeah.
I don't think they can either keep an employee or they just employ so many people that they can't possibly. I can't even imagine the supervisors even knowing everyone that works. It's ridiculous. Most people don't even question anything. Especially when they just walk in, they work. You could walk in a ski mask confidently and do whatever you wanted there, and they'd probably just shrug their shoulders and keep working. But you always, once in a while, you always have some really overly confident first year who thinks oh, this is my job. I have a real job. I gotta keep the place in order. So if they don't recognize you, they think since they've worked one shift and they know 2 of the 1,000 people that work there that they're not they don't have any frame of reference for who works in the pause, so, they question people who walk in. And so, I remember this last year when I was, working, it was the fall, and, I'm a senior, this next first year, I walk in and get a pop, and, I see a couple first years, and they just kind of shy away, but then there's, another one that kind of comes up. It's wait a second, you shouldn't be back here. I'm like, and I continue filling my pop, and I just kind of chuckle. I'm no, you don't understand. I've worked here a very long time. And I proceeded to walk out after that.
Those were always the kind of people that would...
After that. I just said it was the condescension that one in my position would use, I guess.
Yeah. The first years who were there were usually the ones who would give me dirty looks when I'd come in and, drink those flavored creams.
Yeah, give them a couple of years. They'll warm up to the prospect of that.
Yeah. I would do that all the time. I would do that every time I went through the pause.
Sir, do you want to buy anything? Oh, no, I'm cool with these free
beers. I'm all set. Yeah.
I'm okay. Wait, hold on a second. Are you gonna get any more of the French vanilla ones? Because I actually finished off the last one 2 days ago. So if you could actually go ahead and fill it up, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, I remember I would go to the pause sometimes at 10 or 11 in the morning, and I'd say, "Yeah, could I just get a a small coffee?" I was like, "Oh, we don't have any coffee made." Well, when do you make coffee?
I'm sorry, we're all out.
Yeah, are you gonna make any more? Well, we could.
Coffee, I could wait here for 5 minutes and you could make some. I don't know if that's going to happen.
I'm
busy doing my homework for my class in a half hour.
Yeah, at that point it's just, okay, I'll go up to the cage and pay an extra quarter for it.
exactly. And you know they always ran out of coffee during the finals too.
Yeah.
I don't think they ever had anything during finals. Actually, I think they actually closed during finals, but they're open a couple days prior to finals. Everyone's like studying really hard, and you know, when people actually need stuff to stay awake, like the one time they need to come through, they fail miserably. Another terrible thing about the pods, organization. Just organization in general is terrible at the pods. I don't think there's no way they can make any money at in the pods kitchen. I'm sure they're just sucking out of the student funds. I mean, which is fine. I mean, it's cheap food and everything, and it kind of gives students a work opportunity, even if they're half-assing and everything.
Yeah.
One other thing I loved about the pods was that I think the best thing about the pods was the pods pizza.
Now I'm going to end this part of the interview right here, because Isaac and I went on talking about pizza for a long time. And that, of course, is all going to be included in part 3 of the Paul Anderson, Isaac Kidder interview on the Isle of Lucy podcast. And so that should be up within the next week or so. Anyway, I'm sorry there wasn't more music in this one, but you know, that's how it goes when you have a special guest on the air. Some things that you can look forward to, besides the part 3 of this interview. I recently was able to find the unfinished studio recording of The Show Ain't Over, which contains just the electronic drums, played by Isaac, and some guitar parts that PJ and I laid down, and some of the vocals that PJ had. Far from being a completed song, but still, there's some interesting stuff in there. So you have that to look forward to, as well as all 3, possibly 4 entries in the Sun Song Contest. Some more details about that later. So I hope you all had a great week, and look forward to hearing from you next time. This is the Isle of Lucy Podcast. See you later.
Thank you, good night.